y'all caught me dancing to the theme music. Hey, welcome back to another Winning Drive. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Davis. I'm joined by fellow Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel and the coach, former high school coach at Vernon, Capel, Brownwood, Belton, also Rotan, played college football at Abilene Christian, also coached there as well, and was on the staff at the University of Texas for multiple stints. And now you can catch his work at Boom. You see it. It's Coach Bob Shibley. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, what's up? By the way, we've been selling lots of hats. Or Sonny and Jordan have been selling lots of caps, man.
Yeah.
Suede@shieldco.com. You want a Shipley Ranch's hat? Getting more and more all the time to choose from. I understand they're trying to get them a burnt orange cap. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. They got to go through some channels to get that, though. You got to get that approval. Yeah, well, you don't want to get that cease and desist. No doubt. No, if you want the Shipley hats, I'm glad Coach made them available to the public. It's a beautiful thing. And also, people have asked me, why do you give Coach Shipley an intro and nobody else gets an intro? Listen, folks, I'm a football player, okay? I was born in the state of Texas, played football in the state of Texas. Don't y'all know, basically, coaches are basically, they get like priest status around here. Football's a religion. Coaches get that kind of status around here. So that's why Coach Bob Shibley gets an intro when others don't get an intro from me, because he's a coach. Once you're a coach, you always a coach. We refer to him, hey, what's up, coach? He ain't coaching right now, but he's always coach. What's up, coach? Because it's such a respected and revered position to be a coach. You know what I mean? What's a coach? You're a coach to me. You're a coach. The coaches have meant so much in my life, all the coaches in my life. And they have been such positive influences. I wouldn't be where I am right now without all the great coaches in my life. So that's why Coach gets that kind of respect from Rod B. There you go. That's people like, why you go. That's why, damn it.
I was wondering the same thing myself. I'm wondering every time. He's gonna do that again. He's gonna do
every
it again.
Time. Every time. Because it's a position that should be respected and revered. I love especially high school football coaches. They use their teaching and doing all other kind of stuff. It's a position that really has a great influence on the lives of young men. But by the way, that's why I say in all sports, it shouldn't just be football, but I know football. The young ladies and volleyball and softball, the coaches have such a positive influence on their lives. And I know the coaches that I know, like Coach Shipley, they don't take it lightly. All right. It is for them. It means, well, I was just talking to Coach Schaefer, Coach Big Schaefer. And this dude was Derrick Johnson was there. I was doing the third Longhorns podcast. And then Derrick Johnson said when he did his the commencement speech for the College of Education, he said, well, Big Schaefer would come on stage every time one of his ladies graduated. He would like take selfies and be sitting there on stage. And then he said he didn't even get approval for it. Really. He just got to say, hey, that's what I do. I'm just so proud of my ladies. But that's a coach thing. He's like, no, man, that's a big moment. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So that's why Coach gets the respect. I think all coaches should get that. By the way, teachers included, you know, those who are doing God's work in our community, right? The civil service, those who don't get the love, you know what I'm saying? Like they should, that's kind of coaches in that boat. So that's why. Sorry to go on a rant. But.
CJ, what's up, man? You waiting for the drive-in movie to start? Wait for it to get dark?
Coach, it's going to get dark out here sometime. I got the front row seat for it.
They're going to bring the food out and put it on the tray like they did back at Happy Days at Arnold's. You ever seen Happy Days? Arnold's drive-in, they bring out the burger on the tray.
I don't even know why you did that. Why you went that far back on a reference to CJ? Coach, you know you can't do that. Coach, why
you never heard the Fonz? Hey,
no,
he heard
of him, but he don't know nothing about that. Fonzies.
He did the giggle. That's the only thing that was bad with Fonzie.
He did. See, CJ is not going to get that reference, Coach. You got to make
so
a reference.
Lost.
You got to make a reference the last 30 years for CJ. That's too far back.
Coach, I'm probably you ask kids about, you know, 8-10 years younger than me what a drive-in movie theater is. I don't know if they'll be able to give you that answer. I'm on the cusp.
Yeah, Coach, you got to give him more recent reference for CJ, man. That's way.
Hey,
he was doing this is like his thing. Fine, yeah. You know what I mean? He wore like a leather jacket all the time, white tee.
It'd have been a lot better if he was doing this all the time, but
it would. Didn't do that. You know what? Yeah, you would think the Aggies would take some pride in that. Why don't the Aggies bring? They should have been taking pride in the Fonz back in the day, man. You know what I mean?
Hey, CJ, have you ever heard of an old movie, American Graffiti?
Oh man,
Coach. I have.
Yeah, you watched that. It's set back in the 50s. You know, the drive-in and all that stuff. The girls that come out, and, you know, car hops and all that. Happy Days was a real popular sitcom in the 70s. Uh-oh. That was kind of a spinoff, I think, of American Graffiti. American Graffiti got a bunch of stars like they, when they were young, just getting started out. American Graffiti, yeah. There's Richie Cunningham in American Graffiti. Yeah, look at that. Harrison Ford, Ron Howard, Richard Dreyfuss, Cindy Williams.
Yeah, they got quite a few tomatoes down there. 95%. Yeah, I'm gonna have to give this a shot, Coach.
Yeah, it's a good one, man. It's a real good one. It's the same thing. What was a movie that was filmed in Austin about the 70s that our boy McConaughey was in?
Is that Dazed and Confused? Is it?
Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 1950 version of Dazed. You do know Dazed and Confused, don't you, CJ?
Sure, I do.
Yeah. Well, that was set in the 70s. And by the way, that was my heyday. That was exactly what it was like. We weren't looking for pot, we were looking for beer, but that's exactly what it was like in the 70s. But it was just based on the 50s. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Oh, no, seriously. Cisco Diaz says, CJ, there's a drive-in theater in New Braunfels if you want to go. By the way, it's a little far, but. Yeah, that's a little far, but like I said, that would be a really cool like date night thing. So thank you for that, Cisco Diaz. And Working Man, y'all got him making all types of references to the old school. Now he's talking about, y'all remember the Veer? He's talking about drive-in movies, stuff like that. So now Coach got people making references that CJ just
don't know. Animal House.
Animal House. CJ, so have you seen Animal House?
I have. So, Rod, Coach, you're like this. My mom was about a month before I was sent off to college. She goes, well, you're going to college. You're going to have to understand this is the movie about going to college, and it's Animal House.
Wow.
So, listen, my college days probably didn't echo that of Animal House, but I'm glad she did that because we had at least a good understanding of what was to come in college a little bit. So it was a great movie.
Yeah, once again, Mrs. Vogel, she is just getting so many points. First of all, she's a part of the Owen Texas family. And then she basically told you that, no, before you go to college, you need to watch the movie about college experience.
God, we still got the grades. That's right.
God
thank you, Mama Vogel.
Mama Vogel is here. Yeah, no doubt. A legend. A legend in these parts, Mama Vogel. There's no doubt about it. All right. I got to meet Mama Vogel.
It's a good thing she didn't show you Porky's or something like that.
I don't even know the movie, Coach, so I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Now we got to ask, have you seen Porky's, CJ?
No, I haven't. I don't know what Porky's is.
I've seen all the Porky's. I don't
Working
even know
man
why.
Knows. Working Man knows them all. I have seen them, yes. Working Man knows them all.
I had no business at my – I didn't go see them in the theater, but once they came on cable, I would sneak into, you know, yeah, you're supposed to, but I'd sneak and go watch some of the adult stuff. Yeah, with Porky's. Yeah, it changed me as a young man. Anyway, all right, let's see. Coach is the comic relief on the show. I've been told that already. Coach is the comic relief, which we like. I didn't expect that either. I expect Coach to be the comic relief, but that is the case. No doubt about it. That's why we love him. All right, so we got a lot of stuff we're going to get into the show. All your questions, comments, please throw them out there. We'll get to as many of them as we can. Guys, we got to talk about our ex a little bit, the Big 12. Our ex is doing – when you remember – you ever – now, I don't know how – back in the day, but you ever like – because now you can do it on social media. So, Coach, I don't know if back in the day you can be paying – you can, like, keep up with your exes like you can now. But when you keep up with your exes on social media, sometimes you can see them doing some crazy, wild stuff. You're like, man, they're doing some crazy, wild stuff. The Big 12 is doing some crazy, wild stuff. We don't have to really worry about it as much because that's our ex. That's not – that we're with the SEC now, so we're good. But they're doing some stuff. And you know what? I think some of it I think is pretty cool. Some of it is a little risky. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about our ex, the Big 12, a little bit. Of course, my man CJ will give us some nuggets about recruiting. We got some tidbits, of course, because it's a big recruiting weekend for the Longhorns. So I want to give my man's thoughts about that. There is also a ranking, several rankings from Pro Football Focus. They rank the best secondaries in the country, guys. Now, if I told you they ranked the best 10 secondaries in the country, would you think they would have the Longhorns in that top 10?
No.
They do.
No, I would not. Wow. All right.
They do. So we must discuss. They have the Longhorns ranked as a top 10 secondary. So I hope they are correct. I hope they're right, because that would be if that's the case, then Texas might win a they could win a national title if that secondary is actually a top 10 secondary. So that's one of our big concerns going in. So we'll get into some of the Pro Football Focus ranking. They rank secondaries. They also rank D-line. I don't think we've gotten into that. We can do that. And are we not giving Bert Arvin enough love? Apparently, Bert Arvin is already making some way too early All-American teams. I'm thinking to myself, oh, man, maybe we're underrating Bert Arvin. Not getting Bert Arvin enough love, who also is now on scholarship. So congrats to my man Bert Arvin once again. So we'll get into that. I've got a couple other topics that we'll dive into for the day. So, of course, your questions are top of mind, so we'll get to those. We'll also hit any Super Chats. Super Chats, jump to the front of the line. You can interrupt the show at any time to do that. All right, let's start, though, guys, with something that I wanted to get into a little bit. And it's something about the Texas offense, because I was doing some research, on upcoming opponents, starting to do some so I won't be overwhelmed during the season. And I didn't realize how, man, that LSU offense last year was just, it was unbelievable. I mean, it's the best offense in the country. Yeah. I mean, that's statistically, you can say that, or you can debate that, or whatever. I mean, that offense was unbelievable. You can sell that in the draft, obviously, all the guys drafted. But they lost their Heisman Trophy winner. They lost two first-round wide receivers off that offense. I'm sure it's going to be pretty good. They actually probably have the best offensive line, or one of the best O-lines in the SEC as well. Two NFL tackles, probably going to be first-round tackles. But I digress. Getting to it, Georgia also had a really good offense last year, and they're bringing back almost every piece. Texas last year had a top 15 offense. I believe if they were in the SEC based on last year's scoring offense, Texas would have been, I believe, fourth, if I'm not mistaken, because Oklahoma was also, who's going to the SEC, ranked ahead of them offensively in terms of scoring offense, along with Georgia and along with LSU. There could be another team in there, but they would have been a top five SEC offense. The question is, can Texas have the best offense in the SEC this year? Statistically, you know, personnel-wise, however which way you want to put it. Is that possible? Because Georgia's bringing back a lot. Missouri's offense is going to be pretty damn good. I like that offense. I like their passing game. LSU won't be as dynamic, but LSU always has talent, but they lost a lot too. Texas brings back a lot. Oklahoma lost a lot. Oklahoma last year had a better scoring offense than Texas. Is it possible Texas could have the best offense in the SEC? That's what I'm asking.
I would say that it'd be a brash statement to say that. Okay. You know, that's what A&M fans expect us to think, you know. But that is pretty brash, you know, first year in the conference. And although we played Alabama, we played Georgia, you know, we played LSU, we hadn't run the gamut. So I don't know that I would start touting that. What do you think, CJ?
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but I think you brought up a great point, right? You know, Texas for the last few years has been – you know, going toe-to-toe with talent, Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. A little bit different with what you'll see in the SEC, specifically in the secondaries. I think Texas has played really good edge rushers in the Big 12. I think those guys don't get enough credit. Over the last 2 years, Texas has faced five first-round edge rushers in the Big 12 alone. So, you know, their tackles, those outside guys, whether it be tight ends or running backs needing to chip, they've been tested. And I think that you'll see that carry over into the SEC as well. The question is, will they be able to handle a Byron Murphy-esque player in the SEC, which you probably didn't see very often in the Big 12? That's where I think the Texas offensive line could see some issues early in SEC play. Luckily, they play Mississippi State, who's expected to be down, and they play Oklahoma, who, aside from Dominic Williams, they really don't have anybody that scares you on that interior defensive line right away. Michigan will be a good test, but you have all the pieces on the offensive side of the ball, right? You have an offensive line that returns. You have a third-year starting quarterback in the system. You got plenty of wide receivers with plenty of talent. How do they mold together? How do they mix into that rotation right now? And, of course, I think we're all a big fan of the big three running backs right now with C.J. Baxter, Jaden Blue, and Trey Wisner. You look across this offense, and I think on paper you're pretty excited for what numbers they could put up. But, Coach, I mean, you put up a great point. I mean, they've yet to do it. In a brand new conference, they didn't lead the Big 12 in scoring last year. I believe so.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, go prove it, basically.
Right.
Yeah, because K-State also, I should take it back, is Oklahoma, then K-State in the Big 12 that were ahead of Texas in scoring. So they didn't even leave the – so I'm not – it was just a throwing out there because there's a lot of turnover, and Texas brings back a lot of their pieces, and Oklahoma loses a lot. They were ranked ahead of them. LSU, of course, the best offense in the country, they lose a lot. Georgia was too, and Georgia brings back a lot. So basically it kind of be you and Georgia in the conversation. But Texas lost a lot. I mean, they lost a lot of their skill position, guys. You lost three receivers to the NFL draft, lost tight end to the NFL draft, lost running back to the NFL draft. So they bring back their quarterback and some of the probably the most important pieces of the offense, most important elements for the five starters on the offensive line, the starting quarterback. But you did lose a lot of your skill positions to the NFL too. So it was throwing out. I mean, Sark had last year Texas was a top 15 offense in 2022. They basically always been a top 25 offense. In 2021 they were 18th, and I believe in 2022 Texas was around 23rd. Taking it back, 24th, it says here, but ranked in the offense. So could they end up cracking the top 10 this year? I think should be the expectation for Texas because they haven't been a top 10 offense since Sark has been here. In terms of scoring offense. I think that's a reasonable expectation. Whether they leave the SEC or not, they were 15th last year. Like I said, they've been hovering around the top 25 there. I think a leap into the top 10 potentially because you got a multi-year starting quarterback and all the pieces, most of the pieces coming back on the offensive line. And we talked about the skill positions that Texas obviously brought in via the transfer portal and the running back room and the culture of it. I don't know. I think targeting it as a top 10 offense should be a goal. That should be a reasonable goal.
Especially if the big topic and focus this offseason on the offensive side of the ball is finishing in the red zone. I mean, about to talk about Burt Auburn later in the show, Rod, but I mean, 33 field goal attempts. If you cut that even 30%, I mean, you're scoring, what, 7-8 more touchdowns? I mean,
that
adds up over a season's total. So, absolutely, I have to imagine you can make the jump from 15 to 10 if you get, again, better play in the red zone. And, hey, Quinn Ewers returning is huge for this conference where you look at it across the board. There aren't many experienced quarterbacks with these – high expectation teams coming in. Of course, Brady Cook, Jackson Dart, those are the only two right now that really rival Quinn Ewers in terms of career starts for SEC contending teams.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be interesting to see in the last 10 years how many times an SEC offense led the nation in offense.
Hmm.
You know, going against those tough defenses. I Googled it. I couldn't find it.
I know it's LSU a couple of times.
Yeah, maybe
LSU,
so. Yeah.
We know with LSU last year, and then we know with Joe Burrow's group. That I don't know. I got to go look statistically and see if they were number one, but I'm sure they were, or at least top three. I mean, that offense was potent. So I know twice it happened. Because you're right, the SEC's been going through a change. They went from winning championships because of their defense now to winning championships because they can outscore you. It's a different
SEC. Yes, but here's another thing to throw in there as well. SEC's been known for playing the maximum number of FCS schools. You know, that what do they play? A lot of them play two a season, don't they? Or most of them play one. Texas is one of five teams that didn't play a lower division team in the last few. Something like, I can't remember what it was, but you know, they pad their schedule a little bit. It's not, you know, you're not playing Georgia, you know, Ole Miss, Alabama, Florida every year. You know, there's some padding in that schedule as well. I know that because I used to read how everybody always made fun of A&M, you know, for playing, what, Abilene Christian or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, Coach,
they played schools and I didn't even know how to football team.
I think I saw the fact that you're referring to, Coach. And shout out to my man Blake Monroe because he put it out there via his Twitter, and he's definitely a great follow for you at Blake Monroe OTF. But it was a week ago. The Longhorns are the only SEC school that won't play an FCS program during the 2024 football season. Texas is one of only 15 FBS schools nationally to not play an FCS opponent. So ain't no easy wins, really. I mean, that's as, you know, most schools, they'll take an easy one here every now and then on their schedule. Texas got their schedule, you know, as at least as respectable as any in the country when it comes to playing the higher level opponents. All right, there you go. I want to get to that discussion. How about this one from the Green Lantern? I love it. Says big humans is our mantra. In the 1960s, the Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs had small, fast running backs who ran for big yards because they hid the running backs behind a huge O-line. Should we have a package like that philosophically? Thank you, the Green Lantern. We appreciate that. I'll just say this. Here's my experience with that exact philosophy. You know when I experienced it, the Green Lantern? Oklahoma. Y'all remember Quentin Griffin? You remember it?
I don't know.
You remember. Coach remember him. Oh, I remember him. Oh, yeah. Longhorn fans remember him. Dude, this dude, I'm going to go look him up and see how tall he was. He had to be five. What do you think, Coach? 5'6"?
I don't know, maybe. He's like those K-State, a couple of those K-State guys.
They got him here as 5'7". Okay, 5'7". But stout, though, 5'7", like 195, 5'7", like 200. So he ain't going down easy. Great center of gravity, and you wouldn't see him until it was already too late, until he already popped, Coach. He hid Deuce behind. Bond. Oh, man. Deuce he Bond. Hid behind that Oklahoma O-line. Dude, it was – oh, man, I remember him. I don't know if his stats – I know his stats versus Texas, he killed us. And it's exactly what the Green Lantern was talking about. We couldn't find him. I swear, that was the conversation we had in the sideline because as a coach, I said, I can't see him. Like he did it intentionally. We found out later. I talked to somebody who was like, oh, no, he did. That's what he did. He would hide behind those old linemen, let them get their blocks developed, and then boom. And then he had that quick acceleration and that quick first step, boom, and he hit the hole. And you wouldn't see him, and it's already too late. And like I said, you can't bring him down with an arm tackle. He 5'7", 5'6", 200, man. You ain't bringing that dude down on there. You gotta get a hold of. Now, when you got a hold of him, he was fine. You can bring him down. He wasn't necessarily formidable, but you got to catch up to him. And he was quicker than he was fast. Dude, it was brutal. And he, as I can tell you, as a Longhorn fan, we lost. I lost three of the four games I played versus Oklahoma. He was a big part of the reason why. I'll go look at his stats versus Texas, but he was a big, and it was just what the Green Lantern is talking about. I don't know if Texas has that kind of back. Do they have that kind? I don't know if they got a back like that. I don't know if they have a back. Look at that.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
He's in the end zone, probably.
Bro, we could not find him. I'm telling you. It was a stoop strategy. It was, man, I'm telling you, he killed us. Longhorn fans remember it. They're probably talking about it in the chat right now. Let me check. Coach, you remember it.
Oh, we yeah. But same thing with Deuce Vaughn. You couldn't find Deuce Vaughn.
Deuce was like that too.
Here's where I think Texas actually might be able to replicate this a little bit is, hey, Jaden Blue is not the biggest. You know, he's only about 5'10", 5'11". The thing with him is he's pretty darn quick. So if you don't have eyes on him immediately, he's blowing by you. Especially if he's able to get to an edge and you got a middle linebacker still stuck on looking into the backfield. Opposite of him is Jarrett Gibson, who – again, a kind of a similar build, but more stocky up at the top. Doesn't have the top-end speed, but if you're not able to find him and you're running through the holes, he's hitting you before you're hitting him. And I bet over the next year or two, when you really start to see Jarrett Gibson kind of infiltrate this lineup and rotation, that's when you'll start to feel what he can do with the rock in his hand. This year, maybe not so much, but I look for Jaden Blue to maybe, you know, sneak up on some folks because he's not the biggest back. I'm not going to call him 5'7". That's not the case, but
exactly.
he'll beat you with his speed. That's for sure.
No, he definitely will. But I think he stands at like what 5'11" or 6 foot. He's still that 5'7" has a big difference, man. And he would hide behind those guys. But I think Sark was playing bully ball. Sark's not really interested in that. I mean, you could have. I don't even know if there's a back that could have done that. How tall was Keelan Robinson? Maybe he could have had that kind of effect. But Sark does a great job of scheming guys open, creating space. It's just a different mentality. I think the way Sark needs to use his running backs to get more explosive plays and to weaponize them more is just get the more pony package, guys. Just More pony package, more pony package. That's the way. That is the way. Like the Mandalorian. This is the way. Because it's a lead. Trust me, Doc, I've been, it's crazy. I've been tracking this since 2021. Actually, tracking it during Tom Herman's tenure, but there was no point. He never used enough of it. But since 2021, the most explosive, most efficient, and the most effective personnel grouping for Texas has been two back sets. And my hypothesis was, that productivity will drop off when you lose Roschon and Bijan. It's a Roschon and Bijan stat more than anything. They're just so uniquely gifted. And it didn't. It stayed with Jaden Blue and with, you know, Keon Robinson and CJ Baxter. It was still the same thing. Actually, yards per play went up. Yards per rush went up. Yards per attempt up. Explosive play rate was up. It wasn't the highest, but it was up. And all of the metrics were the highest they've been just out of your two tailback sets. I'm telling you, it works. And I heard the great Nick Saban complain about it and say, we don't practice against it enough. So when we see it, my players don't know what to do. He even complained that his players saw I formation one time and he had to call a timeout because they didn't know how to line up. And he talked about how it throws off the angles for the defense and it throws off a lot of the modern rules of defense because they're built to defend spread concepts and not two tailback sets, especially when they are actually still receivers coming out of the backfield as opposed to splitting out or putting them in the slots. So that's how you do it. You put more two tailback set packages together and that's how it'll work out. All right. There you go. So thank you to Green Lantern for the question. Oh, we got a super chat here from Sean. Thank you, Sean, for the super chat. We appreciate that. Said this question needs to be asked. When are we going to start to talk about Rod Rivers being a part of Sark's coaching staff? Thank you, Sean. I appreciate that.
You better ask Mrs. Babers about that.
Coach knows how hard coaches work. I have a lot of friends. Yeah, I have a lot of friends that are coaches. This is more fun. This is way more fun. Coach, that's my coach doing it too. It's way more fun than coaching, you know, having the theoretical, hypothetical conversations. And I do the research. And I have thought about it before, and I've gotten offers before to get into coaching. And first of all, my wife, she don't want to be a coach's wife. That's number one. I asked the coach. I was actually seriously considering an offer at one time. And I said, all right, babe, I got to start thinking about this, man. If I'm going to do it, I got to do it. Because I was like, you can't do it when you're old. You can't get into coaching when you're old. You get into coaching when you're relatively young because you have to travel and move around before you start moving up, that kind of thing. Coach knows how this goes. So I was like, all right, babe, we're going to do it because we had been together for a while. We're going to do it. She was like, nah, I didn't really sign up for that. And I was like, what? She's like, oh, no, I didn't really sign up for that. I was like, really? She was like, yeah, I'm not sure if that's going to work out. And I was like, wow, that's – hey, at least she was being honest. She's like, I'm not sure it's going to work out because a coach's life for a coach's wife is tough, man. It's tough. Like, you don't see me. You're not going to see me. Like, you're not going to see them. You get to see me during kind of game weekends, that kind of stuff for a while. And if you didn't, she was 10 years younger than me too, by the way. That also is kind of part of the equation. And she's like, nah, I really signed up for that. That's I want you to be around, that kind of thing. And I was like, all right, you know what? I don't know if it was worth it. And I think I made the right decision because I've been doing sports radio and been having fun doing things like this. And I still can get offers into coaching. I mean, it's honestly never goes away because coaching is all about community. It's all about connections. Coaches, you know that. As long as you got the connections, you can always get into it at the ground floor. You can always, as Coach always told you, they already know who they're going to hire before they put those job postings up there. So you can always get in at the ground floor if I want to do that. But like I said, I'm a grief to dollars ratio guy, and I know how obsessive I am. I would definitely end up divorced. I know that. I know myself well enough to know I'm going to end up divorced. If I go into coaching, I'm in a divorce. I'm not going to pay attention to her enough. I know that. And I know how obsessive I am. So I know my quality of life away from football is not going to be great. Like, it's just not. That's part of why I had a good woman, because I wanted kind of a well-rounded life, period. And look at these damn papers, guys. Look at these papers everywhere. I got papers all. You see these papers? This is me going deep down rabbit holes. Without a wife, thank you. I got them everywhere. I got papers all over the place. Everywhere. Guys, I would stay down the rabbit hole as a coach. I would stay down the rabbit hole. You go rabbit hole. I go from rabbit hole back to the field, to the practice field, and then go to the games. I wouldn't have any type of life at all. And yes, do I think I'd be successful? Hell yes, I'd be successful. No doubt. But would I have a quality of life that's enjoyable? Probably not. And I know a lot of coaches who are fine with that. I can name them right now. This coach at Texas, they're fine with it. I'm perfectly fine with that. I don't give a damn if my wife hates me. I don't care about none of that. Or that's why you got a lot of coaches now that will say it, and coach knows this, spend time with your families. Because we don't want you to be, we don't want to ruin your life because of your dedication to us. Because we are a family, and we want you being a coach that is happy and has a quality of life that matters. So that's the balance that you have to strike. I've witnessed it and I watch it. Coach can talk about it now, but it ain't an easy life. There are certain professions where your wife got to be just as committed as you. You're going to be serving our country. You're going to be a policeman. You're going to be, you know, in a certain way, you ain't going to see your significant other as much. And, you know, you have to worry about them in certain ways and their mental health and that kind of stuff. And honestly, I think coaching, if you're dedicated to it, kind of falls into some of those categories. It's not life-threatening or anything, but in terms of the dedication and commitment, I think sometimes it falls into that category. For me, it would. For me, it would.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to have about maybe you add up maybe right after signing date, maybe right after the bowl game, maybe in the summer, you're going to have about 3 weeks off in the year. Okay? So you take it down. That's 49 weeks. You're probably going to be working about 44 weekends out of the year. I'm talking about now, you should not be that bad, but now you're recruiting. We got, you know, you got official visits all year. Just, it seems like, you know, mm-hmm. And so you've got camps, you've got visits, you've got unofficial visits. You've got, of course, the season. It's, and those guys don't go home after practice.
No,
you know, well, not
Coach dipped out.
Oh, we lost Coach. Here's another point, kind of that back and forth between whether it be coaching high school or it's coaching college, you know, kind of that jump that you want to make. I was talking to a couple high school buddies that are in the high school world here in the Austin, Central Texas area. You know what they're doing right now, Rod? They're waking up. They're going to school. They're coaching these kids in their summer conditioning for about 2 hours. And then they're playing golf. They're enjoying the summer. You know what these college coaches are doing? No, they're not doing that. They're waking up. They're checking out what's going on in the summer conditioning. Coming in, they're preparing for about 18 kids to come in this weekend. They're not even here yet. And you know what they got to do tonight? Oh, they got to go hit the big man camp, the under the lights camp. That's Moncrief in the bubble that Jerry and I are going to head to later today. So there's a lot on their plate. And like you said, you don't get a lot of time with your family, especially if you're at a program like Texas or Oklahoma or Texas A&M, where the stakes of landing so many big time recruits, it just makes sense to, you know, not spend as much time at home. And that's part of the unfortunate part about it.
Those are two full-time jobs. Being a coach is a full-time job. Being a recruiter is a full-time job. And both of those are part of your responsibilities, obviously, as a college coach. If I did coach, it'd probably be trying to get in college and then get out to the NFL as quick as I could. I ain't gonna lie to you. That's probably, even though I'd be great at recruiting, all of my offers have been at the college level. Like, oh man, and they all say, hey, dude, you kill it in recruiting. Come on, you kill it. And I believe that. It's all about connections, relationships. I like talking to people. I like meeting new people. It's great. That'll probably be the best part of the job. But it is two full-time jobs. And like CJ said, you go from basically being recruiting, and then you go from into that to being a coach. And like you said, coach, in the offseason, you get a little bit of time, but that's why the college schedule is brutal. And I think you're getting a little bit more of coaches, the attrition to the NFL, because in the NFL, you ain't got to worry about recruiting. It's just ball. It's still guys who are dedicated to it, but at least you can focus on just being a football coach, or just, or if you're an executive, just being into talent acquisitions. It's more of a, you know, isolated focus for you as opposed to college. You got to be a master of jack of all trades, pretty much. Yeah. All right. Let's get to another question here. This is from Fred Boy. Then I got a topic for you guys after we get to this question. Fred Boy says, will Texas break ground this summer on their new indoor football complex?
I believe they've got to wait until the demolition of the school. I'm missing what the name is, but the
sociology.
Sociology. So we'll see. Of course, that comes first. I'm hoping so. Of course, that drive over to the bubble, I'm sure after talking to a few guys Rob, I think we brought this up the other day. I talked to Ryan Watts at one of the pro days a few years ago, and I was asking him, like, hey, when you came to Texas, were you expecting this to be where y'all would practice at? And he looked at me and he goes, no. I was like, all right. So I think the players, the program, the coaches, everybody that's involved with Texas football is excited and really just waiting for this new indoor facility to come about. Of course, the bubble, I think, served its purpose at Texas. Of course, I do think it is outdated now. But, hey, you know, the minute Texas gets into, you know, the arms race of what's to come in the world of indoor facilities, I'm expecting that to be a state-of-the-art facility and that to really – you know, pop out and wow some folks.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for the question, Fred Bowie. All right. Before we continue here, I want to thank one of our fantastic sponsors. We're so proud and happy to have South Point a part of the Owen Texas football family. But of course, for them for sponsoring the winning drive, our friends at South Point, they want you to know, Texas football fans, if you want to score an easy extra point this season, you can get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock and their award-winning sales staff. They don't do games. They're not about gimmicks. They're just about getting straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. Remember, South Point is also Austin's number one automotive everything. If you're looking to sell your car, you can get South Point's best offer over the phone or online, and you can get top dollar for any make or model, even if you didn't buy it from South Point. South Point is home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price on the best new Ram trucks or you're making sure you get the best value for your old car. Visit them online at southpointdodge.com, or you can go visit them in person off of I-35 in South Austin. That's South Point Dodge. Get to the point at South Point Dodge. All right. Thank you to our friends over at South Point Dodge for sponsoring the show. All right. Let's get to this Pro Football Focus ranking of the best secondaries in college football. I was a little surprised when I saw this. It came out earlier today, and it's done by Pro Football Focus. Max Chadwick is his name, but he's a Pro Football Focus analyst, data scientist. He does a really good job. I follow his work too. He covers college football. As the top secondary in the country, he's got Ohio State. Number two, he's got the Iowa Hawkeyes. This is for the upcoming season. Number three, he's got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Number four, Michigan Wolverines, who the Longhorns will see. And you can argue that's low for them because they got the best corner in college football coming from out of Michigan this year. And at number five, they have the Oregon Ducks. And at number six, they have your Texas Longhorns. I'll read the – yeah, the Texas Longhorns, that is number six ranked secondary in the country. Thank you, Matthew, for pulling that up. Says Texas returns four defensive backs who played at least 300 snaps in 2023, Jadae Barron, Malik Muhammad, Derek Williams, and Gavin Holmes. Says Muhammad is a rising star in college football after starting at outside cornerback for the Longhorns as a true freshman. His 79.9 coverage grade ranks second among all Big 12 cornerbacks, and his 20% forced incompletion rate placed fifth. Texas also added Clemson's Andrew Mukuba, who from the transfer portal. He ranked seventh among Power Five cornerbacks in 2023 in yards allowed per coverage snap. And Mukuba is also expected to start at safety for the Longhorns in 2024. They got Georgia at number seven, just to round out the top 10 here. Georgia at number seven, Wisconsin at eight, got the Sooners at nine. So they got the Longhorns playing three of the top 10 secondaries in the country. And they got the Arizona Wildcats at 10. All right, gentlemen. All right, what are your thoughts? I'll just kind of give both of you guys the floor. I was a little surprised, but I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm ecstatic. I'm praying that if this is the case, I'm glad we got some data scientists from Pro Football Focus who are really high on this Texas secondary. They did make a lot of additions in the secondary via recruiting, but also obviously Mukuba in the transfer portal is going to be the most impactful. I'll open up to you guys. CJ, you first. What are your thoughts about the Longhorns being ranked the number six secondary in the country by Pro Football Focus?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit high, you know, and I say that I do think Texas on the top line, I think they do have some big names, right? You add Andrew Mukuba, a former All-American freshman. He was an All-ACC kid to this group. That helps a ton. Jadae Barron, we know what he can do. Malik Muhammad, Derek Williams, I think he nailed it on the head. They're rising stars in this sport. But we saw the secondary with the majority of that same group a year ago still not be very good. And there was a lot of inconsistencies. There's a lot of times where teams resorted to playing the pass and you didn't see interceptions. You didn't see balls on the ground. Instead, what you saw were big completions and touchdowns led up like that. And that was Texas of the old. You know, we thought at least coming into the last year that, hey, they would fix that. And I thought they did to an extent. But still, teams were able to inch and claw back in a number of games via the air, where with having this same core of guys last year, I'm not sure it's the sixth best in the country. I think that's a little premature. Of course, I do think it will improve. You add Makuba, a great piece to this. Javion Cole, another guy we expect to contribute often, as well as five defensive backs in the freshman class who you never know who might be contributing, as well as Jelani McDonald, who's really impressed this offseason. So you have plenty of pieces, and I think at the very top you have a lot of talent, but I'd like to see them on the field, especially after that spring game didn't really leave much to write home to mom about, you know. So six feels high, top 10 feels high. I do think this group will be better, but not in the sense that I'm ready to put them in that elite category nationally.
Coach, what are your thoughts about the secondary? Is that ranking number six a little too high? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it is. But I'll say this to the victor go the spoils. I mean, you know, Texas is riding a hype wave right now, you know, and so you're looking at a team that was, you know, one play away from playing for the national championship. But here's how I look at it. I'm a realist. We all watched every game, every snap of the season last year, and along with all of the people probably watching this podcast. There is no way the people that ranked this watched all of our games and all the games of everybody in the country. They go on stats. You know, they go on stats. They don't see the things that we saw, you know. But I will say this, we got a great coaching staff, and you got to give them some credit, and you got to have faith that they will get some things turned around, along with the as you were saying, the growth of these guys and the improvement, and none of them were happy with the way they played overall, I'm sure, last season, especially as a group, and so. I think that's based off of stats, the way a lot of these rankings are based off of. They don't go watch 12, 13, 14 games. They don't see what we saw. But I have hope. I have faith. That's a little high for me, but I'm hopeful that they're correct.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus, they're not eye tests. They have algorithms, and they have their own kind of different computations that they're using and their own formula they use. But I will say that I think the front line for Texas secondary, like the front line starters, are going to be pretty good. And I'm talking about Jahde Barron, Makuba, Derek Williams, Malik Muhammad. The cornerback spot opposite Malik Muhammad may be a bit of a concern in terms of who's going to be Gavin Holmes or Javion Cole. But I love the front line start. Four of the five, I think, are really good players. And I think you're talking about guys with NFL futures. What I'm not really sure about is the rotation of players in the secondary. And I know they want to rotate guys. So your frontline starters are only going to play 65% of the snaps. And then there's still another 30 to 35% of the snaps that Texas wants to rotate guys in. Now, maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe they're blowing out opponents and they're beating them so bad that those guys are playing in reps that don't matter. But if they are rotating those guys in reps that matter, then that can be potentially those unproven commodities could be weaknesses in the secondary for me, because that's what you saw in the spring game. You didn't see a lot of the starters,
right?
You basically, what you saw is the young guys and backups. That's pretty much what you saw. Terrence Brooks, he's gone, but you know what I'm saying. You didn't see I think Taft is going to be in a rotation, but I think at one point it's Makuba and Derek Williams are going to be your starting safeties. At one point. And then obviously your important piece is going to be Taft rotating too in there. And I'm not saying Taft's a weakness, but I'm just saying guys who played in the spring game, we didn't see a lot of, you know, Makuba in the spring game. We didn't see a lot. We see any Jahde Barron in the spring game. Malik Muhammad saw a little bit of him. So Mike said, I'm not concerned about the frontline guys. My concern is that when they start rotating guys in and out, and it's just certain concepts Texas struggled with last year. They struggled with really since Sark got here. They struggle with defending bunch formations. They struggle with defending inside breaking routes. They struggle with defending the deep ball. They struggle with defending empty formation. if you're coming up with a game plan for how to beat Texas offensively, those are your four elements in the passing game. If you go to those four elements, I hate to say it, but based on the last 3 years, you will have success. You will move the ball. That is how you're talking about when you're talking about U of H, or when you're talking about TCU, or when you're talking about K-State last year, or we can go back to 2022 as well. Those are the four elements that the Texas has not really figured out a way to remedy. They don't know how to defend those elements, and they don't have built-in options and answers for when an offense presents them with problems in bunch formations, empty sets, inside breaking routes. and, you know, you start looking at a lot of those things. And like I said, I've been tracking these things, unfortunately. I don't like it, but I've been tracking them for the last 2 years. And it's the same stuff, guys. And in the spring game, I would love to tell you in the spring game, oh, actually, they didn't give up a lot of deep balls in the spring game, but they did. And they've struggled with the deep ball for the last 2 years. I'd love to tell you, hey, actually, inside breaking routes, they are really good against those. They weren't. Inside breaking routes were an issue in the bowl game versus Washington, issue in the spring game. Deep balls, issue versus Washington, issue in the spring game. Deep ball. I mean, it is the same. Like I said, it's the same four concepts. I promise you, if we had film and we had the rights to break it down, I could just sit here all day and get it, because that's what half these notes are. I'm not going to bore you and, you know, frustrate you by giving you the actual data, but I'm here to tell you it's just four concepts for the last 3 years. And that's the I think the frustration with Longhorn fans is like, hey, why haven't we figured out more solutions to solve these problems? Because it's just the same issue. It's not something new.
Rod, at first it felt like you're going down the whole laundry list of ways that teams can beat Texas on my own.
I'm not trying to. I'm just telling you it's the same things. I mean, it's not a secret. Everybody's been watching me for the last
They watch the film.
No, yeah,
they don't need me. They don't need me to tell them. Trust me, they don't need that. But I'm just telling you secondary. That those are the concepts that are continued to work. So I'm a football investigator. I only go where the film takes me. I don't come up with my own stuff. I only go where the film and the data takes me. That's it.
Right. No, I was saying that because every time that you brought up a new one, I'm sitting there remembering back to last year saying, Oh yeah! I remember when Houston sliced Texas to death with a million underneath routes. I remember when Texas went to Texas Tech 2 years ago. All of a sudden, they couldn't get off the field because short routes, the in-breaking routes, were impossible for Texas to adjust upon. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, yeah, every single one of these has merit because we watch it with all collectively our six eyes, and we're like, why is this so difficult to stop? And so, listen, the one thing with Pete Kwiatkowski that I've truly appreciated every year that he's been here at Texas is there's been a specific instance of 1 year struggling at a major part of the game. And then you come back the next year and it's been, you see the resolution, right?
Yeah.
Most recently it was third down and fourth down conversions. It was a disaster in 2022. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It was a disaster. Last year, they led the country in third down conversions. They were the best third down defense in the entire country. Coming into 2024, as we're talking about the offense trying to get better in the red zone, defensively, I think it's exactly what you said. How can that secondary improve? How can you force more takeaways? How can you get off the field on those underneath or in-breaking routes while still maintaining enough coverage over the top? That, to me, is exactly what I think this group is going to improve upon. And I think it's going to be twofold because, one, you're going to look at the bodies in that secondary room. I think there's going to be a little bit more speed and a little bit more athleticism. And, two, I think you got more talent up front to get pressure on quarterbacks to make that window and that timing a little bit quicker as well. So that's what I'm most looking forward to whenever I look at this Texas defense 2 months out from whenever these guys put on the pads for fall camp. With that said, I want to see it before I ever throw them into this top 10 elite category as well.
Yeah, I'll give them props about this because this is something I was a little surprised at when I looked at it. And CJ, you probably know this because you're obviously you're on the stats. You do a great job kind of going down the deep dive of some of these things. When you looked at interceptions last year, Texas – was tied for the top 10 in interceptions last year. I knew they had gotten their fair share. I didn't realize they had gotten that many. If you go look at it, you know, overall, I mean, that's pretty good for Texas. Now they're losing Jerry Thompson, who I believe had three of those. Terrence Brooks had three of those as well. So that's six interceptions that are gone. But I do believe, you know, Jahdae Barron and Malik Muhammad are guys who are havoc-minded ball hawks. And I do – Michael Taft, Taft Daddy. Shout out to Taft Daddy. It was three interceptions too. That's the guy that gets his hands on the football. So the next subject I want to bring up, because I think it's a perfect segue, is about havoc plays. I've been tracking havoc plays and the defenses Texas will play that has the highest havoc rates. Havoc is just splash plays with the defense. So we're talking about, you know, interceptions, PBUs, tackles for loss, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, the sacks are included in the tackles for loss. Add those up. Those are your havoc plays. And then you can get havoc rates from that as well. Texas, basically your best havoc player the last 2 years, you could argue is Jahdae Barron.
Yep.
Because he was third 2 years ago. I think Jalen Ford did DeMarvion Overshown. They were first, and he was third in havoc plays. And this last year, he ended up basically kind of leading. He was tied for the lead in havoc plays this year. So
makes sense.
Him, Anthony Hill, and Ethan Burke basically are the guys who had the most havoc plays that are returning. Jerry Thompson had 10 and a half havoc plays overall. Terrence Brooks had 9. But of the guys returning with double-digit havoc plays, it's Jahdae Barron, Anthony Hill, Ethan Burks in that category. So those are your top three havoc defenders, guys who make splash plays on defense. And honestly, I think Malik Muhammad will join that list this season too, along with that group. I think all those guys, Hill, Barron, Jahdae Barron, like I said, multiple years, he's been that guy with double-digit havoc plays. Hill, he had 11 tackles for loss alone 2 years ago. Who else can join the group of double-digit havoc plays? That's the key, right? Who's going to have – because that's been the elite defenders. It was Jalen Ford 2 years ago, along with DeMarvion Overshown, and then Jahdae Barron.
And hopefully someone up front, right? You would love that.
It's hard for D tackles. I'll say this. It's hard for them to get a lot of splash plays. I mean, they can only do so much. They get tip passes. They can get, you know, tackles for loss. But then it kind of stops for them right there. They don't get a lot more. They don't really get a chance to get fumble recoveries. Yeah, they can force some fumbles, but it doesn't happen often. They're not tracking defenders in space to be able to do that. And they don't get interceptions usually, even though that can happen too. So it's tougher for D tackles. So even though those guys are awesome, they don't really – I can see they're impact players, but they're not going to make this conversation. Yeah.
Well, Coach, I got a question for you. When you're game planning for an opponent and say you're looking at the Texas – you know, you're about to go play Texas's defense next week, and you got to look at an Anthony Hill, you got to look at Jahdae Barron in the slot, and of course, Manny Muhammad out wide. How difficult is it when there's guys like Rod is saying that make so many disruptive havoc plays to formulate your game plan coming into the week? Is it just, hey, we're going to roll with what we can and just pray that they don't have a great game? Or is it, you know, I'm going to have to completely reroute what we do as a result of their athleticism, their length, and how they can get to the football? Is it just a fine juggle, or is it kind of differ coach to coach?
I would say typically most coaches have plan A and plan B. Plan A, we do what we do. We're going to see if we can, you know, control the line of scrimmage and do what we do. And if that doesn't work, every coach typically has a plan B, especially when you're going up against just a straight running stud. You know, you're going to see how you do one-on-one, how you do with your regular scheme. If that didn't work, you better have another plan. And if you don't, then, you will. You can't coach in that league. You can't coach at the University of Texas and rely on nowhere. Nobody's going to rely on plan A. You know, you mean you don't have a plan B? You don't have an answer for this? No, I don't have. Yeah, you got an answer for it. There's no doubt. And sometimes, you may come up with some new stuff right off the bat. The first quarter, the first couple of three series, to throw those guys a loop, things that they weren't expected to see. Maybe some blindside blocks, which are mostly illegal. But even if you get a flag, you still, you know, knock some of the cobwebs out of that dude, you know. And he's thinking, you know.
Yep.
So there's a couple of ways. And My old standard was run those suckers sideline to sideline, man. Run that wide zone. Run them back and forth and get them just thinking about surviving or get their butt off the field so they can catch your breath.
One of my favorite little quotes that I listen every now and then to Bussin' with the Boys, and that's Will Compton, Taylor Lewan, two NFL legends. They got their podcast. They talk ball pretty often up there. But Will Compton, a 9-10 year vet linebacker in the league, one of my favorite things that he says as a linebacker is, listen, we understand how important third downs are because we want to get the hell off the field. And the minute that chain resets to a number one on the first down marker, then it's like, oh, shoot, like everything that we just did previously, it just doesn't matter. And so when you talk about surviving defensively, it's all about exhaustion, basically, because, you know, those plays add up. When you build up those multiple 8, 9, 10 play drives, well, by play 25 or 30, you know, those guys aren't moving the same way that they were previously. And I think about that all the time. You know, when a team gets that crazy 3rd and 14 conversion, that morale on the defensive side of the ball, it just evaporates. And so that I think that's exactly why Texas had so much success defensively last year, is because they were, one, well rested, right? They were off the field on third down so often. And two, the Texas offense played complementary football very well. You know, they weren't giving the football back immediately after getting it. And that's partially, you know, not scoring very early in those drives, but two, sustaining drives and playing that complementary football that Sarkisian wanted to do. So I love that part as well. I thought surviving was a great little comment there.
Yeah. I'll say this too, just since we can end the conversation here about the Havoc players, and they were talking about the secondary and made the segue, and CJ just talked about money downs, third downs. Defending targets to bunch formation, defending targets to inside breaking routes on money downs, 3rd and 4th downs, Texas defense allowing over 50% conversion rate both times. Just throwing it out there. That's
good point.
This is part of the problem. That goes back to percent about surviving. To me, that has been part of the issue, is that on those crucial downs, those elements, they've been problematic. And Texas hasn't really figured out a solution. Anyway, but the Texas secondary, if they're going to be that good, they got to solve those problems. I think that's the point that we're all getting to. And they got to be more Havoc-minded. But I will say, last year, I was a little surprised at how many Havoc plays they made. We want more sacks, but in terms of the secondary, they got a lot of interceptions, and they got their hands on a lot of footballs, a lot of PBU. I think they had 66 passes defended overall, which is also a pretty good number. I think this year you'll see that number rise. Real quick, the defenses Texas will play that have the highest Havoc rates. I wouldn't track this. I thought Michigan would be number one. They're number two. The Aggies are number one.
Wow, that's up front seven. Listen, they got guys. That front seven can get after it a little bit.
I was surprised.
We'll see if that sustains. Obviously, they lost a lot of pieces. But that starting seven, if you go anything beyond that, guys 8, 9, 10, 11, they probably won't have the depth. But those starting front seven guys are really talented.
I was a little surprised by that. By my calculation, Oklahoma, which they were really high. I think the interceptions, Oklahoma ended up with 20 interceptions on the season. They're third in Havoc rates, that teams with the highest Havoc rates that Texas will face. Fifth, Mississippi State actually jumps up there, and Arkansas, and then Georgia. So Georgia doesn't make a lot of splash plays. They just suffocate you.
Yeah.
They don't defend a lot. Georgia didn't defend a lot of plays because they just suffocated teams in terms of and they only had 30 sacks on the season. They didn't have a lot of sacks either. Texas had more sacks.
What you're telling me is Georgia defensively wasn't that great last year?
No, you just didn't make a lot of Havoc plays. They were great. They were still a good defense. You can be good and not make a lot of splash plays. It's like Robbie. I was good. I dropped a lot of interceptions, but I was still good. I mean, I didn't – Robbie, I got out of PBUs, but you know what I mean? Like, you can be good and still –
They were just very sound.
Havoc plays to me is a little bit different because Texas, I just told you guys, they were top 10 in interceptions last year, but they were one of the worst pass defenses in the country. Yeah, I mean, so you can both of those things can be true. Texas was a bad pass defense, but they made a lot of plays on the football, which they did. 66 passes defended, and they got a lot of interceptions. So they got 16 of them. So I think both things can be true. You can be a havoc-minded defense, but also not necessarily be a sound, structurally sound defense. All right, let's get to a couple more questions here. Here is a question from Mikey Mike. Says Sark loves to stick to the game plan when it comes to play calling. Sometimes I think it really hurt us. Y'all think he won't do that as much and call plays based off the flow of the game? Thank you for the question, Mikey Mike. I'll say this. I've often criticized Sark's feel for the game. I think he's getting better at it, but I think his feel for the game at times can be off. His opening script, remember the bowl game, the sideline reporter reported? You guys remember this, that his opening script is something like 30 or 40 plays? You guys remember this? Am I the only one? You remember this?
No, I remember it. I thought it was nuts.
Yeah. Okay. So that was kind of, so I don't know, in terms of sticking to the game plan, maybe his opening script may be too long. I don't know. I think Sark has done a much better job though of basically coming up with creative counters for the opposing team's adjustment. I think he struggled with that in year one. I think in year two, he was better. I think in year three, you saw some really, I think, creative, innovative counters from Sark. And almost like I think he anticipated the adjustments better. Meaning, you know, I think at one point, coach, you almost have to give the opposing coach credit and assume they're going to have a great adjustment for whatever your game plan is going to be. And then come up with a counter. What's going to be your counter? Once they have an adjustment based on whatever your strategy is or whatever your scheme is, what's going to be their adjustment? Then can you come up with a counter? And what if you have the counter almost ready to go, like Kendrick Lamar and his beef versus Drake? What if you have it ready to go because you've anticipated that they are going to have this adjustment? You go, oh, I already knew they were going to make that adjustment. I got the counter. I feel like that Sark had that at times last season with opposing defenses.
I'll say this about the script. I thought last year's first drive for Texas was much better than what we saw in 2022. Aside from the Oklahoma game where you kind of get an errant pass from Quinn and the ball's picked off, I thought the first drive or two that we see from Texas each on offense, that ball was moving. Whether it scores or not, it's past midfield. And then you come into question whether or not you go for the fourth down or not. We saw Texas do that very often early in games a year ago. Whereas 2021, early 2022, we saw a lot of, you know, three and outs. I thought that this script felt more in tune with what Texas had positionally, where their weapons were. Obviously, an older quarterback helps in that case as well. But we weren't looking at a 2021 Texas versus Iowa State game where you had 7 total yards in the first half, right? No, that they're moving the football with that script. And I'm very encouraged by that because early in games, whether you put points up on the board or not, field possession, very, very important. And so that's encouraging to me there, 100%.
Here's another good one by Mikey. Mikey, he's on the streak. With Texas facing K-State every year, do you think that will be an advantage against A&M since Colin Klein is their new OC? Coach, you brought this up the other day. We're doing football theory, and I think you talked about this a little bit when it comes to this. What are your thoughts about Colin Klein as the new OC for the Aggies, and will that help Texas in terms of the game planning and strategy going up against someone familiar? This is a familiar foe.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be an advantage for Texas. They've seen him. They know what he likes to do. You know, the difference is going to be, you know, I'm sure our coaches probably have a really good idea of the personnel that Texas A&M has, what he's going to have to work with, you know, is going to make a difference. He's going to have better athletes at A&M than he did at K-State. But I do think it's an advantage. It's a big advantage. As opposed to somebody like, you know, Oklahoma State, Gundy, he hires these obscure guys from FCS and just tears people up. Nobody, you know, you got to start digging to try to find film. It's not nearly as easy to find film on those guys as it is, you know, Power Five guys. But I think it's a big advantage. I really do. I I think it's going to, I think you're going to see, I don't know that, I think it's going to be a good offense. I really do. I don't think they'll lead the conference in passing by any stretch, but I do think they will have a good complementary offense run and pass.
Yeah. People are high on Wigman. I mean, we talked about that one of our live streams. A lot of the kind of the analysts, the draft analysts for the 2025 draft thinks that he has first round upside potentially. We'll see if Colin Klein can bring that out in him. All right, thank you guys for that. A couple of the questions here. CJ's from Jedi Master Bevo. CJ, besides Moore this weekend, who are the next maybe five or six must gets from this weekend's visitors?
Yeah, Moore's absolute. I mean, he's number one. There's no surprise there. Aside from him, I think Nick Brooks, a really talented tackle prospect from Iowa. John Mills from San Francisco, California, coming in as well. Two really talented offensive linemen there. On the defensive side of the ball, Kevin Wynn, to me, is amongst the most talented interior defensive linemen Texas is recruiting at the moment. Really talented kid. Smith Rogbo just had a number of folks mention the momentum that Texas Tech was able to build a week ago when he officially visited in Lubbock. If Texas is able to kind of counter that and come in with a pitch of their own, this is a guy that, hey, Jerry and Bobby have kind of likened his rawness right now early to a Brian Arakpo. So we'll see. I think he has the get off as well as anybody in the state of Texas. It's all about getting that frame to where it wants to be. He's right now, I believe we have it about 225 pounds. Yeah, 220 there. But you see 6'4". He's got incredibly long arms as well. And, of course, Riley Pettijohn to me is a very, very important linebacking prospect in the state of Texas for this cycle. So those are probably the five or six. I think Texas is in good positions for all of them. But it obviously depends on what it will look like this week after the official visits.
All right. Good stuff there, CJ, about the big official visits coming up for the Longhorns this weekend. I mean, CJ is going to be on it. So if you want updates, first of all, you just need to become an OTF OG. That'll help you out right there. That'll go. But also go stick to ontexasfootball.com and stick to my man, CJ Vogel at CJ Vogel underscore OTF. It's a great follow. Coach, they should also follow you, Coach Shipley. Coach, do you know your Twitter handle now? Do you know what your X handle is now?
No what idea.
Is, you have no idea? You still don't know?
Well, I can look it up just like you can. I don't have any idea.
I think it might be. I think last time was it Coach Shipley? No. Bob Shipley? All right, let me look this up. We got to find out Coach's X. There you go. Boom. What is that? Robert Shipley 2.
Okay.
30K, Coach, okay. Come on.
Coach got more followers than all of us. 30K. Come on, Coach.
They like my jokes. I don't know.
Matt, pull up the whiteboard. We'll get some formations going.
Look at that. That's how much I told y'all about the respect people have.
We're not going to play. Man. We're not going to play Jeopardy, are we?
Oh, man. All right. There you go. So Robert Shipley, too, if you want to follow Coach. I'm at Rod Davis in the Twitterverse. Just make it easy on everybody. Okay. Well, I got a couple of other topics I want to hit. But before we do that, let's thank another one of our fantastic sponsors before we get ready to end this thing. Our friends over at Flat Creek Estate Winery. We're so excited about having them a part of the Owen Texas football family. And so happy that they're on board. And did you know that the most awarded wine in Texas is actually the vineyard closest to Austin? That's right, folks. Flat Creek Estate Winery is just minutes from downtown Austin. And they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. I can personally vouch for Super Texan. It's fantastic. My wife loves it. It is actually one of her favorite wine right now. And it'll be your favorite too. Super Texan is now available at your local Specs. So give it a try. Of course, Black Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. So keep that in mind as well. Flat Creek Estate Winery. That's flatcreekestate.com. I would also recommend around this time of year, I know it's the rosé is great too. So go to flatcreekestate.com. You can look at all of their selections, but the rosé is good. But my wife, yeah, the Super Texan is fantastic. There's a reason it's winning so many awards. It don't take long for you to realize it's pretty special. All right, thank you to Flat Creek Estate for supporting Owen Texas football and supporting the winning drive. All right, gentlemen, just real quick before, and we'll get your questions in and we'll answer as many of them as we can before we get out of here. But just really quickly, guys, we got to talk about what's happening with the Big 12. I don't know if you guys have heard these stories that have probably come down the last couple of hours here. There are two stories now the Big 12 is making news with. So we're just going to talk about our ex for a little bit. We ain't going to talk about them for long. That's why I say the end of the show just for a few minutes, because I think it does affect all of college football. Remember, we've talked about this before, guys, that with programs having to close the revenue, close the financial gap between, you know, revenue sharing now with the players and the new financial framework of college football after they settled the antitrust suits, that some would entertain the possibility or the option of private capital or private equity. Well, the latest report here from CBS Sports says the Big 12 is considering private equity investment of up to $1 billion for as much as 20% of the conference. Crazy. It says here on the table is a possible cash infusion of $800 million to a billion from Luxembourg, a Luxembourg-based CVC Capital Partners, in exchange for a 15 to 20% stake in the league. A portion of the money would go directly to the 16 conference members, and the partnership would give conference access to CVC's investment services and clients. Wow. Talk about being, it says CVC is a global private equity giant that manages over $200 billion in investments. All right, gentlemen, what are your thoughts? Talk about the new, Coach, I want to hear your thoughts. The new era of college sports where private equity, private capital might become a little bit more commonplace than it's ever been. We've never seen it before, so no commonplace, but still more leagues may consider this. You got now a power league that's considering it.
Well, my comment will take about 10 seconds. I'm a ball coach. I don't even know what that means. Okay, so 3 seconds.
I like that.
I don't even know what that means. I mean, I'm just like, it doesn't sound good to me, though. But, I mean,
it ain't whatever. Good. I don't know if it's good. But CJ, your thoughts.
Coach, I'm similar to you. I'm just financially illiterate, so I don't know what it means either. it's weird, Rod. I mean, it's scary. It feels like you're kind of trekking down a dangerous path anytime you bring in these private equity groups, right? You know, and if this is what is needed to maintain growth in your conference, I mean, you better knock it out of the park. Otherwise, you might be sitting around telling 16 different schools, universities, and athletics departments that you're going to have to be homeless in a few years. It's scary to me. I mean, I hope it's not what we see throughout the rest of college football and college sports, but, you know, Big 12's trying something. When OU and Texas leave, you got to find, you know, a way to stay on top somehow.
I don't know even how that would work. Like you own the conference, but what if the conference is made up of the members? I don't know what that means.
I'm sorry, man.
You know, see, I'm not financially literate enough to be able to break this down for you. But a conference is made up of the members, so I don't even know how that would work if you owning 20% of the conference. So it could get, I'm sure, really complicated.
So are they gambling that 20% of the conference take is going to be more than $1 billion?
That you could argue that, or they want to flip it. Now people, you know what I mean, the private equity somehow, they would like to repackage it and sell it somehow. Like, I have no idea. That's a great point. So
the current valuation by the investment from this private equity group would put the Big 12 in its entirety at $5 billion.
Yep.
What would you estimate the SEC's is?
Oh, maybe.
Double?
20 billion?
I would say this.
10, right, at least double.
I can't imagine the SEC needing anybody to help float them.
I agree, Coach.
That's a great point. Like, what's the NFL worth? What is NFL, like $17 to $20 billion a year annually? That's what the NFL is worth, something like that? In between there, $15 to $20 billion. And the SEC and the Big Ten, if you combine them, they may get close to that number if you combine them somewhere around there. I mean, you're talking about just overall value of two conferences, but that's a great point, CJ. I'm not sure exactly what, based on that, their valuation is, but what the Big 12 gets out of this. 18 billion. There you go. I knew there was somewhere in there.
You were there.
So somebody may have asked the question, hey, what the hell is our conference worth? And is $5 billion, are you lowballing yourself? Like, is the Big 12 worth more than $5 billion? I don't know. It's a great question, CJ. All right, last thing here about the Big 12, since we're talking about our X, just really quickly. They're also, and this probably actually is going to happen. The other one is they're just considering it. The Big 12 is discussing naming rights for the Big 12 conference. By the way, everything's about to get naming rights. You know, now the field can have naming rights. You can have sponsorships for the actual field. So that's going to happen. And then pretty soon it'll be stadiums. And yes, you'll probably have the jersey sponsorships too, just because it only makes sense. It's an easy revenue source for these programs who are trying to, obviously bridge this financial gap that they have. $30 to $50 million naming rights there with all states may happen. And if they do it, guys, the SEC is going to do it too. Everybody's going to do it. It's just too easy. Now, the SEC don't need the money, but if somebody's going to pay you $150 to $100 million just to put their name across your conference, a lot of conferences probably would do it too. So,
well, I think what you do is you get together as a conference and you look at ways that you're leaving money on the table. You know, how can we be more efficient, financially? And I think that is easy money. I think I don't like it personally, but it's easy money, and they are leaving some money on the table. I think, without doing some of that stuff, it's not, the company's logo on the field, that's no big deal. How does that take away from the game? It doesn't take away from the game.
No,
And even a little patch here and there on a uniform. I mean, I don't know. I don't think, what does State Farm have the net up, for the kicks when they go through the uprights? Mm-hmm. That's pretty smart. I don't know what the revenue is for that, but pretty good way to pick up some extra cash.
The best name that I've heard, sponsorship that I've heard, it comes from David Ubbin. He said they should call it, it should be Whataburger that sponsors the conference, and call it What a Conference. Done.
Yeah.
Done deal. Yeah. I'm all for that. Easy money. Just do it. What a Conference. That's good. I like that. All right. Before we get out of here, quick, CJ, Noor Mortaja wants to know, although a long shot, did Dijon Lee make his trip to Austin?
Yeah, so his official visit was pushed back a week. He'll get to Texas next week for an official visit, 18th through the 20th. Again, Texas outside of his top four at the moment. They'll need a big splash on this OV, but a 6'4 cornerback, you'll always take your shot with that.
Justin wants to know, how many linebackers, cornerbacks, and D-line are they trying to take this class?
Yeah, D-line anywhere from 3 to 4, linebackers 2 to 3. Of course, I think it depends on who your linebacker fits are. If you get Elijah Barnes and Riley Pettijohn in your class, that's a hell of a class. That duo is very talented. Cornerbacks is a little bit more interesting to me. I think you'll sit with 2. I think this class is going to be pretty large, but I think you'll go with 2 cornerbacks again as well, because you did just have a really talented 5 defensive back group 2024. So 2 to me makes sense. 2 to 3 at linebacker, and then 3 to 4 somewhere on the defensive line.
All right, great stuff, CJ, as always. Thank you to Coach Bob Shipley. We appreciate the wisdom and the wit and the wisdom from Coach Bob Shipley. Thank you to Matthew behind the scenes. Matthew's the real MVP of this thing, folks. It can't happen without him. Trust me on that. Thank you guys for all your contributions and your participation in the show today. Thank you to our sponsors, South Point Dodge, as well as Flat Creek Estate Winery. We appreciate them. Tomorrow, you got coffee and football starting at 8 a.m. We'll also have a live stream at 1 p.m. Someone says $1 billion for a conference that runs through Lubbock, Texas. Hey,
that's good, Sean. I got to give it to you, brother.
That's good stuff. Like that. Yeah. And that's and for Sean, too. We appreciate you guys and all of your participation in the show. For Coach Bob Shipley, for my man CJ Vogel, for Matthew Golden behind the scenes, for Matthew behind the scenes, and also for South Point Dodge, for our friends over at Flat Creek State Winery and the On Texas Football family. Until next time, same time, same channel. Hook 'em.